Today, I'm interviewing Cardi B.
Why the f*** are you laughing at me? Sorry, I just said the F word. Beep that out.
And I'm also interviewing Kim Kardashian.
And they just like love the vibes.
But for real though, I'm interviewing Natalie Friedman. Natalie is a comedian, actress, and voice actress whose impressions have been shared by the likes of Jamie Foxx, Kim Kardashian, Cardi B, and so many more, gaining an audience of over 1 million followers on Instagram and regularly collaborating with big time creators like King Batch and many, many more. So whether you're a comedian, you're an actor, you're an entrepreneur, you're a creator, there's something in this episode for you, and we cover it all. Here's Natalie Friedman on the Travis Makes Friends podcast. Welcome back to the show. I'm Travis Chappell, and I believe that if you can connect with the best, you can become the best. So after creating 800 podcast episodes about building your network, I've come to realize that networking is really just making friends, if you're doing it the right way anyway. Join me as I make friends with world-class athletes like Shaquille O'Neal, entertainers like Rob Dyrdek, authors like Dr. Nicole LaPera, former presidents like Vicente Fox, or even the occasional FBI hostage negotiator, billionaire real estate mogul, or polarizing political figure. So if you want to make more friends that help you become a better version of yourself, then subscribe to the show and keep on listening, because this is Travis Makes Friends. What's going on, everybody? Welcome back to another episode of the Travis Makes Friends podcast. Today, I'm making friends with Natalie Friedman. Natalie, welcome to the show.
I've watched some of your financial advice videos. So as you know, I'm a billionaire because of your videos.
Well, you're welcome.
So thank you.
I guess your welcome is in order.
Yeah. But no, you very have some really good informative videos. So.
Oh, thank you. I appreciate that. Well, I honestly forget how I first came across your stuff, but I'm a big comedy fan. Mm-hmm. And anybody that's constantly like just creating and creating and creating online, I just... I tend to really like their stuff if it's actually funny. And I watched some of your videos and was like, oh, she's like legitimately a funny person.
Thank you.
And so that's when I reached out and tried to get you on the show. We've been going back and forth for a little while, but now we've actually made it happen. So I want to, before we get into some of the stuff that, you know, you're up to now, I want to kind of go back in time because, you know, I don't remember my career counselors ever giving us the option of becoming a influencer and YouTuber and comedian in school. So I'm
That's
curious.
What trauma does. That will give you that.
So let's dig right into that then. Talk to me about, let's say, 9-year-old Natalie. Mm-hmm. Set the scene. Where were you in the world? What was life like for 9-year-old Natalie?
I like that question. 9-year-old Natalie. I was probably watching SNL with my parents and like watching all that and
all
Are You
that.
Afraid of the Dark and Nickelodeon and Rugrats and everything. And
Rugrats was my jam.
Yeah. I definitely did like a Ask Jeeves search, a Google search on how to be on SNL.
Okay. When you were young.
I thought that I could do voices. And I kind of would watch movies and TV shows and say, I want to do that.
Yeah.
Like, I'm silly. And then I would kind of make jokes in class and sometimes inappropriate, like sometimes not.
Yeah.
Like, you know, I was still a good kid.
If you're being influenced by SNL, you know, and you're like 10.
Yeah. I was a good kid, but I think I sometimes like would say the wrong things in class and the teacher would be like, no. So I think it started there, and then I like did dance and stuff. So I was on stage and like I loved that feeling of being on stage. And then when I made people laugh, I loved that feeling. So
where were you? Like, where did you grow up?
I was in Minnesota.
Minnesota.
Yeah.
Okay. Gotcha. So not a lot of like LA influence out in Minnesota.
No,
obviously.
I think that, you know, my mom really loves the live theater and thinks it's important.
Okay.
And I think it's important too to just expose kids to all sorts of art. So she did a great job with that. And so I would watch, you know, plays and theater shows. And I would also think like, I think I could do that, like transform into characters.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So it started very young for you.
Yeah. The desire started really young.
What about the implementation?
I started doing stand-up about 10 years ago. So I wish I would have started at 9. I'd be like, be better than Chappelle.
You'd have some experience. That's
yeah,
for sure.
I wish. But you know, it's all hindsight 2020, right? So I would just like write jokes in like Word docs when I'm like 17, 18, but not act on it.
Okay.
And then started doing stand-up in New York City. I lived there for 10 years.
Oh, really? Okay.
And went to acting school out there.
That's what I was, that was my next question.
Yeah.
Is like, so if you had an interest in it, but you're growing up in Minnesota.
Mm-hmm. Moved to New York.
Was it like was your family pushing you to go to school or like get a real career or do any of those things before you decided to do?
They didn't push me to do anything, which is nice. I have like very supportive, like do what's going to make you happy.
Mm-hmm.
I think it was more the move to New York was so shocking.
Yeah.
Like, you know, they're like, you'll come back after a summer. And I was there for 9 years, but I had cousins on the East Coast. So it made it easier.
How old were you when you moved?
20, I think. 20 so or 21.
Pretty scary then.
Yeah.
Move from, you know, Minnesota culture is slightly different.
Oh, don't you know? We're a little bit different. Oh, yeah. I was like, where's the casseroles? That's what I need. I need like my snowsuit and just move to New York. And I was so like naive and nice. But I think I think I was born a New Yorker because I just have that like that stereotypical hustle and like, you know, drive. And
we live here now, obviously. Yep, What made you switch from
What made me switch is a combination of things, a little bit more opportunities. I mean, it's great in New York too. Yeah. There's also stand up here. So the weather, just, you know, wanting to be in the Mecca. And then I still go to New York for opportunity. So I love it.
Which one's better, LA or New York?
Oh, that question. I just love the LA weather and the lifestyle. All those stereotypes about LA people being more chill and not working as hard is so not true. Hmm. It's just people are people in every different city. And there's the fake people LA thing I also don't think is real. I think you can find real people everywhere. Sure. Travis makes friends, so he does that. And so, sure, like there's Hollywood aspects that, you know, we all kind of don't like.
Sure.
Things like that. But
yeah, I feel like New York is like somehow busier, even though LA is also really, I think it's probably just the concentration.
I think it's stacked on top. Yeah, exactly. And then LA is like this. So it's just, we're all in New York, it's like this. And Manhattan is, you know, in terms of miles, it's smaller.
Right.
But it's,
that's the biggest difference. Because like I could say, like, I'm coming to LA. And it's like, well, what does that mean? Because that could be like an hour and a half of driving distance and you're still in LA. You know what I mean? Whereas New York is just like, oh, well, we can't drive in New York because it's just this tiny little area and there's millions of people there.
Yeah. But I love both coasts. I'm just checking to see if I look pretty and skinny. Okay. But yeah, you do. You do. We're good. Yes. So I love both. I really love both.
What about the food?
Ooh, you know what? I would love to do like a Michelin star taste off. I sound so bougie. Like that would just be so fun to be like one of those. I don't know. What is that job position called when you get to a restaurant reviewer?
I guess a critic.
That was the more elegant way to say it. I've experienced good food on both coasts.
Yeah,
for sure.
Entertainment.
Think you just kind of like need to know people and they'll, you know the right restaurants to go to. Cause I've had like, you know, I've heard some comedians that are in New York, they'll come to LA and they'll be like, the food sucks. But it's like, you went to two places.
Exactly.
The place you went to sucked for you. But I think the food in all major cities is good. Cause there's so much diversity. And I think I've had like some of the best Mexican food here. I'll say.
That's very true.
Yeah. It's so good.
It's hard to beat.
I've had really good Italian food here and New York, so I don't know.
That's also fair.
What do you think?
I honestly have not done New York enough times. Okay. So I would choose LA for a lot of the things, but I grew up around here, so it's more difficult to say because I haven't spent a ton of time in New York. That's why I want to ask you, because you've lived in both places and for extended periods of time too, not just like, oh, I was there for a couple weeks or a month or whatever. Because I genuinely was curious. I would like to spend more time in New York. I think it's a really cool city anytime I've gone. Like if I was going to tell somebody from out of country and they were like, I'm going to go visit LA, I have 1 week, I'm going to go visit LA or I'm going to go visit New York, which one should I go to? I would tell them New York. Because I think you could see more of the city in a week's time and get a lot more accomplished. Like, whereas LA, like we're talking about, it's just, like, what do you mean? What do you mean LA? Like Santa Monica, LA? You mean like Los Angeles? Yeah. You mean like LA Live?
Hollywood.
You know what I mean? Hollywood? Like, where are we talking about? Beverly Hills? You know, so I think I would still recommend like, hey, why don't you go check out New York first, you know, and then make your way to LA.
Mm-hmm.
But anyway, okay. So you go to... Move to New York and go to school, you said?
Mm-hmm. Went to acting school.
And so you're in acting school. What do you do during that time to like make a living, pay the bills?
Oh, we're going to go all there. Okay. Yeah. I was a part-time, I guess, babysitter/nanny for a family. And it was a lot of work to juggle all of that. And then I did fit modeling for a little bit. And okay. basically, long story short, if you're not familiar with what that is, you are a certain size, you're a number size. And when a clothing brand comes out with your size pants in a new model, you try them on for the brand. It's not like I'm in ads or anything.
Gotcha.
So you're, I'm the fit model for this size for this brand. So I did that as well as nannying part-time. And then I did some voiceover work and I just kept
And going to school.
Yeah, and I just kept climbing out of, you know, the gigs to try to get full-time comedy. And then I started doing social media. I was a little late to the party, I think, compared to some of my peers. Like, I started flying here and doing collaborations with some of the creators out here.
Around what year is this?
It was sporadic, but I think I really started hustling with it maybe 2015.
2015.
2016.
Okay, gotcha. So it is like a few
years
after
social started. Like, I had an Instagram account, of course. Sure, I had a Facebook account, but then I was really like, oh, you know, I could do a stand-up show, but I also want a following too. And then I saw what jokes they really liked, and I'm like, I should like do impressions in my videos because that gets big laughs live. So it kind of just kept evolving. I would do more trips out here, more collabs, and then you just slowly climb out of the side hustles as a lot of people know that have side jobs that you know they want to get out of eventually that are just temporary. You just kind of slowly get out of it. It's different for everybody, but it does feel really good to look back on and be like, wow, I did that. Like, because when you're sitting in it, you're dreaming about this.
Right.
And then if you have a stressful day right now, it's like, no, but just remember when, like.
Right. Exactly.
Yeah.
Remember where you came
from.
Those
kids are probably grown up now.
Yeah. There's a concept. There's an author named Ben Hardy, and he talks about, he has a book called The Gap and the Gain.
Mm-hmm.
And the whole concept is talking about how most people, we tend to, as especially if you're more of an overachiever or you're somebody who has a lot of big goals and dreams and ambition in life, you tend to always look at the gap. What stands in between where you are now and where you want to be.
Yeah.
Rather than looking back and seeing the gain and like being thankful and grateful and excited about where you came from and the fact that you're not back there anymore. You're not going to school and banging your head against the wall, being a nanny and doing this side job and that gig and this model thing and this thing and just like scraping pennies together just to try to live a portion of your dreams, you know what I mean? And then you do all that work and for an extended period of time. And then because you still keep moving the goalpost, it feels like you haven't done anything.
Yeah.
You know
but
what
it's,
I mean?
It's every day counts, every brick counts, like you said. And gratitude is so important. We hear it on all the podcasts. That's such an important daily routine, even if it's thinking it to yourself, if it's writing it down. I think that's really important to look back and watch your growth and see where you can improve. And
Can't be grateful and anxious at the same time.
Yeah. You know, that's a good one.
Constantly.
Can you voice audio that to me so I can just replay it? Because you said that really good.
you have to take time to do it. But
yeah,
I'm not gonna keep talking about that because, like you said, every podcaster talks about it. But there's a reason they do,
and
right?
There's science
because it works
about it.
There's
like,
a lot of it. Yeah.
Yeah, your brain has to focus on that, and then you get more of it.
Right. So, was there ever a time during that hard period where you ever thought about getting a real job, or were you just like so committed to figuring this thing out in some capacity that it never even crossed your mind?
I like that question. I think I never really thought about a plan B.
Okay.
Although that pill works great. it's effective, I think.
So far,
it's worked out in my favor.
Well, I got two kids, so.
Yeah, you don't know about that. But I never really was like, you know what, if this doesn't work out, I'll be a doctor. I never really fully explored different options.
Okay.
Because I thought I was in, you know, you just kind of think you're invincible. I'm in my young 20s, and I'm like, this is going to work.
Sure.
And then you see a little bit of results, and you're like, this is going to work. This is going to work.
Was there a specific goal in mind? Like, I want to be a stand-up comic, or I want to get on SNL, or I want to, you know, act in comedy movies or act in dramas, or was there ever like a, this is like the ideal?
I think it's a combination of things. I really looked up to some of my peers, like Amy Schumer. She went to the same acting school as me, and I saw that she had her own show. She did stand-up. She was touring. She was in movies. You know, she She also did Broadway. Like, that's, she's just so well-rounded as an actress. Yeah. And so I'm like, all of those things, you know. I would love to have my own TV show, be on other,
what,
you know.
What type of TV show?
It would be a comedy, probably.
Like a sitcom or like?
Sitcom or like a very updated sketch show.
Oh, like a Chappelle show type thing?
Yeah.
Like a
Key and Peele? I thought that Key and Peele did amazing. Chappelle show, Inside Amy Schumer, In Living Color. Of course, SNL.
You know who was really good that isn't doing anymore is Nick Kroll.
Okay, Kroll yeah, show. I saw his.
The Kroll show.
Yeah,
was
some really good sketches. Yeah. I watched those with my parents. But
yeah
I think that I have so many different goals. I'd also love to produce and direct. I think I have a good like director's mind. And So a lot of different things that I know over a span of, you know, if I'm doing this till I'm 85, I have a lot of time, which Gary Vee always says, like, you have so much time.
It's true.
So like, just be patient.
You're young as fuck.
Just be patient. And your parents are like, hurry, your clock is ticking. Right. And you're like, but Gary Vee said, what?
Gary says I could be an entrepreneur at
78. Yeah, Gary says I could take my time. No, you need to meet somebody and have baby. But yeah, I think that a lot of different goals and like producing and writing and all that stuff is so fun. And then you see the final product on TV or whether it's a movie or a TV show, it's just magic.
What do you enjoy the most right now?
I'm really writing a lot of new stand-up.
Okay.
And I had two shows this week, and it's just magical when you try a new joke and you are excited about it, and then it's new and it works, and then you mix it in with your old material. It's invigorating. It's never ending. You're never done with stand-up. You're never, even the veterans that I look up to, they're always working on it. They're always getting excited. And so I like that. Right now I'm really diving in, especially with the strike, which, you know, paying respect to that, but it's enabled me to sort of focus on the stand-up a little
more. Well, you got to.
Yeah. Right?
You're writing your own stuff. You can perform your own stuff. And that's also the nice thing about having YouTube and Instagram and these other things. Like, you can keep working and keep making money doing these other things while still, like, you know, paying respect to the thing that is what is on everybody's mind that lives anywhere near this zip code. You know what I mean? When you're talking about even the legends still are working on it, all their stuff all the time. We went and watched Tom Segura recently when he came through Vegas, and it happened to be on my birthday. So I had a bunch of friends in town and we all went and watched him. And I had just watched his stand-up special that he just came out with, Sledgehammer. And so we go to the show, and I was figuring that a lot of the material would be different, or that he would do some crowd work or something. But some of it would be maybe overlapping because the special just came out, you know. We went to the show. He probably did like 75 minutes of all brand new material that I'd never heard of. No crowd work at all. Just like completely just over an hour. They're just like, that's what makes people like him great at what they do.
That's great.
Is he is just constantly working out new material, coming up with new bits, touring, testing it out, scrapping stuff, adding stuff, putting stuff back in, and just coming up with the next hour. You know what I mean? Which is just, it blew my mind that it was just like, wow, you just did over an hour of brand new shit when you just did this like 3 weeks ago. And this is like, so you've been working on all of this other stuff while you're working on that. It was just like,
that's mind blowing.
And you have the podcast, multiple podcasts, the podcast network. And I was just like, that's incredible. Is a true professional, you know, to your point.
You're like, Natalie, now the question is, are you that? Are you doing that? You just cut the part where you said his name and then just make it like, that was yours. No.
That was you, yeah.
No, I think that's incredible when you see a comedian in the next time. But, you know, I think sometimes people ask me, like, so when you go on tour, do you do the same stuff? And it's similar to being a musician, right? You put out an album, you are going to play those same songs.
Sure.
Taylor Swift is probably doing most of the same songs, and Beyonce, and you know, so I had a friend say, like, I went to this comedian show, then a month later I went because my friends wanted to go and he did the same jokes. And I was like, well, that's still his tour and he's working on it for a reason, and he's saying it over and over again for a reason. Both are impressive. Like, that's amazing. And I want to be able to like just pump out new stuff. And then there's certain bits where I'm like, I have to keep saying these over and over again to get the wording just right. And I'll flip some words and I'll move stuff around.
Yeah.
Or I'll like pause. I'm like, maybe I need to just make a facial expression at this part, and it will make it pop more. And then there's some new stuff. And then there's like a joke that, you know, is kind of like a classic core joke that I've been doing for a few years that So it's kind of like always a work in progress. Always.
And you do a lot of impressions in your stand-up too, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What are some of your favorite impressions to do?
I like doing all of them. I like it if the crowd is having a good time.
Okay.
So I would say like my Kim Kardashian is just a classic. It's one of the first ones that I started doing. And they just like love the vibes. And like I can do some of her, like I do her sister Courtney. I can do that too. And like sometimes I just have like the sisters talking to each other. They love that. And then if something's like in the news current, you know, I'll do that. And it's interesting too. Just the other beautiful thing about comedy is every audience is different every night. There's this subjective, unexplainable, different energy every night.
Yeah.
And you kind of use your gut and you're like, I'm not going to do the Trump impression tonight. Like you look around or like I am, or like I'm going to try this or I'm not. And that's also the never ending thing. So sometimes I'll come to the club and I'm like, I don't know if I'm going to do this joke until I get there and look at the audience. And I don't even know what that means. I don't know what I'm looking for.
Right.
I'm just looking around the room like, okay, it's just looking like this.
Energy.
Okay, it looks like the United Nations tonight. So I'm going to do this joke. And it depends on the comedian. And then if a comic is working a specific set for a reason, they might not waver that no matter what the audience looks like. So it just kind of depends on everyone's process.
When was like a time that you, or was there a time that you just bombed really bad that made you be like, why am I even doing this?
Yeah. Yeah. I think if I didn't have shows like that, then I'd be a wuss, you know? So
every single comic has.
Yeah. I've had those moments and you're just, I would be surprised if not every comedian has said in the beginning stages, like, I don't know if I want to do this anymore.
Yeah. Yeah.
I'm sure entrepreneurs say that a lot too.
I'm sure
all types of fields.
Basically anything that you want to be good at.
When I've had those kind of shows, which as you progress in comedy, you kind of have them less and less at that bombing thing becomes less and less, but it's just the degree of how good the show goes.
Right.
But yeah, I had those moments where I'm like, do I really want to do this?
Yeah. How would you define a bomb then? Is that like a full just like 15 minutes of zero?
Yeah, laughs? I think some people's definitions might be different. Mine would be like, oh my God, you want to get off stage and you're just like outside of your body watching yourself.
Yeah.
And you're like, you can feel that the audience is embarrassed for you.
Mm.
I think that's like a full bomb.
Yeah.
And then you're like, I just want to get off stage. And like maybe you get off stage early and you just like had a terrible time. I think that's a full bomb.
Yeah.
And then, that's not a good feeling.
But then the opposite of that has to be the best.
Oh, the opposite of that. Yeah. And I've had veteran comics give me advice. They're like, in the beginning, they were like, enjoy all of it, even the bombing. I'm like, what are you talking about? Yeah. But they're like, they always say, you know, I had a friend say this to me the other day. He's like, I remember those nights when I bombed 10 years ago. And then I got like better, so much better because of them.
Hmm.
You know, and athletes will say that too, maybe about their worst game or whatever.
The difference for comedians, I think, is just because it's so visceral.
You know?
Like it happens as an entrepreneur all the time and happens to athletes or whatever. But I think for comics, it's
subjective. It's, you don't.
Yeah.
Whereas like with an athlete, they can be like, well, I didn't.
Like I didn't score points or whatever, you know, but to your point, like, I don't know, there's gotta be, that's why I give so much credit to stand-up comedians because like you're doing something that is risking social capital. You know what I'm saying? And then like when it's not accepted, it's like a public failure.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Even as a podcaster, it's like, you can fail a bunch, but you don't get that immediate direct.
Yeah, you can't bomb
feedback.
As a podcaster.
Right, exactly. Like even if nobody's listening or it sucks, it's like, well, yeah, I'm gonna suck at the beginning, but like I don't have to like see the look on the audience's face when I suck. You know what I mean? I can not pay attention to feedback on my podcast for 3 years until I'm good at it. You know what I mean? But if you're in there, like you literally can't.
Yeah.
If you can't master the audience, then you're never going to make it as a comic to begin with.
Mm-hmm.
And so that it's just way more,
that's
to
true.
Me, it's like so much more visceral to be in that stage, but also also to the other extreme as well. When you're killing, mm-hmm. it's got to be like one of the best feelings.
Oh, yes. It's a great feeling. And it sounds cheesy, but you're like making all these people's days and you're entertaining them. And you're like the reason that they get to escape their stress or their job and they went out with their friends. That's like a really good feeling. This Monday, just 2 days ago, I felt so great. I did some new jokes and they worked and just felt so amazing. And you're like, you just had a blast. And then you really feel like you're living in your purpose. Mm-hmm. Like mm-hmm. that's kind of like, I'm like, oh, I got this gift. Like I'm using it right mm-hmm. now. I'm using my gift and it feels really good.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then
if you could snap your fingers mm-hmm. and instantly be, you know, top five of any one of the things that you do.
Oh, that's a tough one.
What would you choose? But you could never do any of the other things again.
Oh.
So like, you know, influencer, social media videos, YouTube, whatever.
Stand-up comedy. Between acting and comedy?
Stand-up comedy, acting, directing, writing, producing. Like if you're just like ooh, instantly snap your fingers, top five.
Well, it's between acting and stand-up. So it's those two. But that's a really tough one because I want to be like a great actress and have fun and be on camera. And then I also want to be like so great at stand-up and entertain in both ways. Yeah. So I guess for the sake of entertainment, I'll choose one. Snap my fingers, be the top five like in the world. Mm-hmm. Let's just go with acting.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because I think that's...
It's tough.
The stand-ups are going to be like, you don't really love it, bitch. Yeah, you're a fraud. Exactly. That means you don't love it. I knew you were doing it for that.
Yeah, yeah.
But you said snap your fingers. So.
It would be a very, very difficult choice.
Yeah.
You know?
They're both. That's why when you said what's your goals, it's like they equally are both. And then luckily I have people I look up to that do both. That one translates to the other and vice versa. Yeah, you get to put some of your stand-up premises in the show or in the movie and... Yeah.
Right. I've seen even Bert Kreischer's movie that came out recently.
Yeah.
You know, I love seeing stuff like that happen where it's just like a person that decided to get in, to an open mic one night. And now like 30 years later,
you
have a movie where Mark Hamill plays your dad. Like that's so cool. Awesome.
Yeah.
Like, you grew up in the 80s watching Luke Skywalker on TV. Now he's playing your dad. You know, it's awesome.
And I just thought of Sacha Baron Cohen's journey when you asked me that question. And I'm like, just seeing how he went from like Ali G on Comedy Central you know, all the way, just such amazing work and how collaborative it is.
Yes.
That he sits at a table with comedic writers and they film. I'm sure there's so much improv and there's, it just looks so fun.
I wanna
just
be on
fun.
Set. Yeah, exactly.
It looks so fun and that that's he's an inspiration of mine for sure because he does characters and accents and transforms and plays well. Same with Eddie Murphy, one of my biggest inspirations.
Yeah. I mean, he's
with the Nutty Professor and the Clumps. And he's one of my biggest inspirations. And so,
How do you like to consume comedy? Like, do you like watching sitcoms or stand up or like?
I like everything. Okay. I appreciate all forms. I love a funny TikTok. I love sitcoms. Yeah. I love a stand up special. I'm like looking at everything.
Yeah.
I love it all.
Whatever
if it makes,
makes
me laugh. And I have equal respect for YouTubers as I do with the stand ups.
Yeah.
Like, it's all these awesome platforms that. Mm-hmm. You know, we have. So I look at everything. To look at everything.
What about other entertainment? Or are you like mostly comedy? Like if you looked at your entire entertainment consumption as a whole.
Yeah.
Are like what percentage of it is comedy?
Probably like 75%.
Okay.
I'm fun fact, and this has happened in the most recent few years. I am very much becoming very sensitive to scary movies.
Mm.
And I wasn't like that as a teen.
Interesting.
So I could watch The Saw with my friends and then you sleep over at their house. No problem. Like, you know, you're like a little scared when it's dark and you're alone in your house. Like, I remember watching the scariest movies when I was a teen.
Yeah.
Whether it's by yourself or usually with your friends at like a sleepover or maybe on a date when you're like 17, right, with a guy. And the older I get, it's really hard for me to deal with like a lot of violence and like, I don't know. So that's just a weird fun fact. And
that
then
is a weird fun
I
fact.
Forgot who it was.
It's usually the opposite.
I think it was, like a major model with like definitely at least 30 million followers. I forgot who it was, but she posted that she's also really sensitive to like violence and scary movies now. And then I kind of read the comments And it was like a lot of women being like, me too, me too, me too.
Interesting.
And then here's another funny story. So I, not to name drop, but I did like a little podcast thing with Dr. Phil.
Yeah.
And I told him about it because I wanted to know, like, is there like a science behind that?
Mm-hmm.
And he was just like, huh, I guess you're just sensitive to that. You know, like he didn't know, he didn't have like this concrete. But yeah, I was like, right. It's just funny. I can't, I watched Fatal. Am I saying that right?
What is
it? On Netflix. It was one of the top movies. And it's great. Shout out to Deon Taylor, the director. But it was so much violence. And I was just like, I handled it.
Mm.
But my adrenaline is pumping. And I sound like a grandma, but it's true.
Hmm. That is interesting.
There's nothing wrong with being a grandma. See, look at what I'm scared.
I'm really just trying
to get
you canceled.
An interesting fact, though?
It is. No, it really is. It's interesting, too, that there's a bunch of other like women that.
Yeah, I'm sure it could be men, too. But I just think that I just want things. I just want to watch like happy things. And I tried watching Squid Game with my parents.
Yeah.
Also, amazing production and acting.
Mm-hmm.
I love the story behind the writers and directors and how big it got. I watched the first episode and I'm like, it's too much blood.
Mm. Interesting. Are you going to watch the movie Saw?
I could be in it, though, because when you're on set, it's totally different.
Sure.
So I could be in it if all the directors heard that.
To be clear.
Do it. It's so different than when you're watching it.
So you're going to watch the new Saw movie then?
Is there one or are you joking?
Yeah. No, they're legit.
No.
Yeah. It's coming out.
Do you remember watching those and just being like, why did I do that?
Well, fun fact, I watched, so I grew up deeply religious. So
okay.
I wasn't really allowed to watch much or uh-huh. like even play video games that were not rated everyone.
Yeah.
So in college, we did a road trip because I was on the basketball team and we were driving across the country from like California to I think like somewhere, I don't know, Oklahoma or something.
Yeah.
For a basketball tournament. And for some reason, one of my buddies was just like, we should watch Saw. Cause he was like, the story is so cool though. It's like a great story. It's not just like just for gore or whatever. And I was like, all right, cool.
Yeah, just chopping off your Achilles tendon. That's,
yeah, right.
Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah. So that road trip, we like started with Saw 1 and we watched.
Oh my gosh.
Like, we didn't finish until 5 o'clock in the morning in Oklahoma.
You should have vlogged that.
Yeah, right. And we watched Saw 1 all the way through. I think Saw 6 was out at that time. So we watched 6 Saw movies like back to back to back to back to back.
How many nightmares did you have?
Yeah, I was gonna say we were in the hotel, and we start we pulled an all nighter like accidentally just continually watching because the story unfolding was actually a good storyline.
Yeah,
know? It like hooks you in and draws you in, and it starts, you know, there's a congruent timeline that starts happening, whatever. And so we just kept watching them. And so we pulled an all nighter on accident, and we got up at like 5:30 a.m. We were like, I mean, can't go to sleep right now, so.
Yeah.
Let's just go down and get some breakfast, you know? So we like all just walked downstairs in the hotel to like go get the whatever continental breakfast.
Yeah.
And I just remember like sitting there by myself at the table before everybody else came and sat down. And I was just like so aware of my surroundings. Cause like when you watch that much, that like you feel like you're in that world. You know what I mean? Like if you're watching
that many
consistent things, and especially if you do it through the middle of the night, cause you feel dazed and.
Yeah, and it's
you're
back
sleep
to back.
Deprived, and you know you're in this world. I was sitting there. I felt so weird. I was just like, I feel like any second somebody with like a fucking
you're like, are my friends about to hurt me? Are my friends about to betray me right now? You're like looking at your friends.
It was a concentration of violence, the likes of which I had not experienced to that point in my life.
So I know you're watching the new Saw, but I'm not.
I probably will. Probably will. I haven't watched any of them since then. So,
I
probably will watch the new Saw. I've heard though, it's less violent than some of the past ones.
Yeah.
They tried to focus more on like the story. It was a buddy of mine, was interviewing a bunch of the people for it, for the movie. And so he got a pre-screening and he was
nice.
Like, oh yeah, it's like way more tame than the other ones were. So maybe there's something there. maybe you should watch it. That's
maybe.
All I'm saying.
That's a big maybe.
Okay. So 75% of
I'd say so.
Is comedy. Mm-hmm. Favorite sitcom of all time.
Oh, I loved Full House.
Full House was great.
That was just pure happiness.
Yeah. Yeah, that's true.
Yeah.
Yeah. Always a good lesson.
I always liked you. That's a show when you're young that you could just rewatch the episodes.
Yeah. When I, yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
For sure. It was always, that was on a bunch when I was a kid, for sure, because it was clean.
Yeah.
And as a kid, it was funny.
Yeah.
You know?
Fresh Prince of Bel-Air.
Also, I had a massive crush on the Olsen twins. So I was watching like all of their stuff,
yeah.
You know, at the time. And I don't know, when I was like 11 or 12 or whatever, I was just like watching all of the movies that they made, you know?
Yeah.
If you were going to insert yourself in the cast of a sitcom purely for how fun you think it would have been to work on that show, which one would it be?
Ooh.
Like, not necessarily for the success of the show or what it did for their careers. Like, what, which one you're like, that just seems like they had a blast doing that and it would have been fun to be a part of it.
The Cosby Show. Just kidding.
You just say just kidding so fast, just so we couldn't cut it.
Dang, I got to commit afterwards to the jokes and not say just kidding. The Cosby Show. Yeah. But beyond that, Fresh Prince, that looks like a really fun cast.
That's true.
Yeah, I think I could be the funny
Fresh
friend.
Prince would be good.
I think funny classmate.
I feel like The Office was probably just
The Office.
One of those shows that you just I feel like you just got to be. Always had to be cracking up behind the scenes. You
know? I would say The Office if we're going more current, because I was thinking of throwbacks when I was little. But Office, I think would be. I'd be another Office member.
Yeah, Steve Carell is just masterful in that. It's so good.
Yeah.
Okay, so
you could pass as his brother or something.
I could.
Yeah.
Oh, well, thank you.
Yeah.
I think. Yeah. He's a cool guy.
Take that.
I would like to have him as my brother.
Yeah.
Carell. Chapel is like kind of similar.
I thought that's C-A-L-L. Why I did this. That's why I said yes. Yeah.
Close enough.
Yeah.
It's actually closer to Dave Chappelle.
Yeah.
But we look less alike.
Yeah, a little bit. Yeah. Yeah. You'll get Dave on. You'll get him on soon.
Yeah, yeah.
You're like 3 months away from
we're
it.
We're tight.
Yeah.
Okay, so you are... I want to go back to the timeline of your career a little bit here. So you are in New York and doing a bunch of side gigs and all that stuff. And you said you're traveling to LA to do collabs and start kind of the creator online space. At what point did that really start becoming more at the center of your attention? Because you obviously spent a good amount of time doing it now.
Yeah,
with the following
years
that you've built, and that has not happened overnight.
Yeah,
contrary to what most people think.
Yeah, it took a lot of years.
Yeah, so tell me about that.
I would say, so I still lived in New York, but I would do a lot of LA trips.
Okay.
But I would say, gotta give a shout out to Cardi B, because like I did a Cardi B impression, you know what I'm saying? And she reposted it. Oh, you know what I'm saying? She reposted me. And like, I got like a lot of followers from that. Like, I got like a lot of her followers. So like, I gotta thank her. Like, I got like a lot of New York street cred. Why the fuck are you laughing at me? Sorry, I just said the F word. Beep that out. You know what I'm saying? Like, let's just really confuse these producers. Like, what the hell is happening? So that was a big, like, a lot of my stuff
you
got
can cuss, by the way.
A lot. Okay. But yeah, a lot of the, but you could beep it out. A lot of my stuff got reposted. So thank you to everyone that's reposted me. Like, thank you, Cardi, and shout out to Worldstar. They reposted a lot of my videos, and I did some comedy raps.
Okay.
And I did Kim K impressions that they reposted. And sometimes when you're whatever going viral, I guess let's use that term loosely. You can't really see everybody that's reposting you. So I would have some posts where I like would get like 40,000 followers in a week. And, you know, some of my fellow creators, they have that happen often because they're at like millions and millions and millions.
Sure.
But that kind of just the momentum. Then you kept the momentum going. And then like any business, which is interesting, you have ebbs and flows. Mm-hmm. And then you're like, wait, this is going slower now. Like it's been quiet this week. And then you have another video that's funny, or you have like a stand-up clip that does really well. So that just kind of started taking off. And then
because you were starting that from scratch, essentially.
Yeah, totally.
Right? Like you just had like everybody had social media. Like
yeah, I remember
friends,
having
family.
I remember having 2,000 followers.
Okay.
And it's, I don't know if you remember Instagram when it was way back and like, it's just all about pictures, mm-hmm, you know, mm-hmm. And then I, you know, whenever the video feature came out and yep. I remember when stories first came out, that wasn't always there.
Oh yeah. They stole it from Snapchat.
Yeah.
And then dominated it.
Yeah. So it just kept building and building. And then I got paid opportunities from it. Mm. And I'm very thankful that I had people to look up to that had followings, big followings yeah. and kind of knew the business side of it and how to monetize it. And then, you know, Facebook gets monetized and TikTok. And same with my TikTok. It was like some videos that just really went off.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
And people love the impressions. People love impressions. It's like a magic trick.
Yeah.
So that kind of all just concurrently happened. And then you just keep going. And
how many videos do you think you made before you had one that went viral?
Ooh, I like that Gary Vee question to do reps. It's hard to put a number on it, but I mean, I think just like maybe 1 in 20 were kind of like going crazy at
okay.
that time.
Okay.
Whatever that means at yeah. that time. And again, the algorithm is so different now, and that's sure. a whole other conversation. Like,
but this is like after you're already seeing momentum.
Yeah,
stuff,
so right? maybe when I was at like 200,000 followers, I feel like there was a point where like all of us and my peers, we were like getting a million views, like kind of like more easy. Hmm. It still has to be a good video.
Sure,
like,
sure.
Of course, but it maybe felt that way at the time.
Yeah.
Or maybe we were all just like kind of all working together and reposting each other's videos, this is probably interesting to people that don't do social media, but there's just such a great network of creators here that, yeah. you know, there would be collab days where you'd meet at somebody's house and like 15 people are there.
Wow.
Or 5 to 15 people. It's not always 15. And you're yeah. like, here's my video idea. Let's shoot it. Here's your video idea. You take turns. Hey, can you shoot this? Hey, can you light this? And you do a whole content day.
Nice.
I know creators that would like shoot 10 videos in a day and then like the next 10 days is about editing and posting. There's no right or wrong.
Sure.
So I'm sure that like... You know, answers
fantastic.
That question. Yeah. Like,
because we have a bunch of, you know, people that watch and listen to the show that are entrepreneurs.
Yeah.
They're trying to hack the content game. They're trying to do something in content because Gary Vee tells them they should, you know,
but they have
like a window washing business or they have a whatever.
Yeah.
You know,
and they want to just start with social media.
They're a florist. You know what I mean? And it's like, I don't know what to do. I don't know what to post. So like hearing what the like creation schedule of full-time content creators is extremely helpful and valuable for them for sure.
And I think like, you know, to give him one more shout out, Gary Vee says, if you're adding value, whether it's educating, mm-hmm. entertaining, informing,
yeah,
like they will come if you're putting out that good work and you're being your authentic self.
I love the collaborative ideas. Mm-hmm. Obviously, the show's called Travis Makes Friends. It used to be called Build Your Network. I used to run masterminds and group coaching and events and all this
other
stuff.
I love all that.
And I am very big believer in, you know, if you want to go fast, go alone. If you want to go far, go together.
Yeah. And I saw that on Instagram today.
Yeah. So I'm curious on how you like initiated some of the relationships that you have with some of the creators that you were kind of coming mm-hmm. up with. Like, you know, how did you meet those people? Were you reaching out? Were you DMing them? Mm-hmm. Like, hey, let's do something together. Let's work together. Did you just meet them at a coffee shop? Like, how did those relationships come about?
Yeah, I think it's a combination of a lot of things, just how you would make friends in general. Yeah. Like I probably sent a few DMs with, you know, an idea for somebody mm-hmm. and they liked the idea, you know, always adding value.
Yeah.
Cause I'll get messages like, hey, let's work. And it's like, what does that mean? that's like the most common DM I get.
Let's work, or hey, let's collab. Yeah.
And it's, I appreciate it. I do. I'm flattered, but
by doing what?
Yeah. I would always send a detailed DM if I wanted to work with somebody.
Specific ask.
Yeah. Specific ask. And then if it's a no, that's okay.
Yeah.
And then meeting people organically too. You know, you meet one person here and the stand-up circle is small in some ways. So you meet somebody who does stand-up but is also a creator and you just kind of keep meeting new people and keep putting yourself out there. And you go to the content house and then you've just met 10 new people.
Yeah.
So it just kind of kept unraveling like that. And same if you're an entrepreneur, go to those events, send a DM with a specific ask that adds value. And, you know, I think that it's just like, it's about reps too.
Yeah.
You know, like I like the expression, you know, figure it out and keep trying. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And like, maybe you think you're trying, but are you really trying? I ask myself that all the time.
Yeah.
Because we tell ourselves, well, I tried. I messaged three people and they said no.
Yeah.
Well, don't be a stalker, but try whatever you're trying, maybe more than what you're trying. Or
did you message 300 people?
Yeah, you know? Yeah. So I think that's with everything in life. Mm-hmm. That's kind of what I've learned as I keep maturing and evolving in life is if you really want something and you keep going at it and you keep trying and changing and asking and don't be afraid to ask, you know? I'm not a veteran comedian at all. Like, I'm very flattered that I'm on your podcast, but I'm still learning from the greats.
Yeah.
And, you know, I'm not afraid to like ask them advice and, you know, not have an ego.
The ability to handle rejection is like directly correlated with success
in
any area.
Yeah.
But especially I think when it comes to like comedy, acting, entrepreneurship, sales, like there are some, like every area it's crucial, but there are some areas that I think where it's even more important.
Yeah.
And like you said, if it's one of the weirdest fears to me, I guess what I'm trying to say is the fear of rejection.
Oh, like what if this doesn't work?
Because it's just tough. It's a fear that everybody feels, that most people feel. But at the end of the day, if you are too afraid to ever ask for anything, you're only ever going to, like, the worst case scenario is that you're in the same position that you're in right now.
If you don't ask, the answer is always no.
Yeah,
and I think I think I'm pretty brave when it comes to like asking for things. And when I was in my young 20s, I know, surprise, I'm not 22, you guys. I know. I think I wasn't afraid. I wasn't afraid of how I looked or for asking advice. Hey, I know you've been doing this a really long time. Like, you have 5 million followers. Wow, I love this video. You know, I thought of this idea for us, like, no pressure.
Yeah.
See, I'm giving you guys a template. Should I teach a class?
That's perfect.
And then if you're, you know, like that's you perfect. Said, like a really specific business, let's say that you own a restaurant or an accounting firm and you're not going to be really looking for collabs. You want your own, you know, you want to do your own content too.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, you have that information that adds value. You have a hook. You make it fun.
Mm-hmm.
You use your personality. You know, I think that there's, but yeah, I can see how starting from scratch with social media could be daunting for some people.
Intimidating for sure. Yeah.
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 Yeah. Cause I started, you know, like I said, years ago. So.
And that's what I like. That's why I like to talk about it because like I said, people look at you now and see you now and make certain judgments about how you got where you are or what it took.
Yeah.
To get
or if
where
they just see my page, they don't know my story. So they could think, did she just get a million in the last year?
Yeah.
Did she, you know,
well, you said you've been working on it since 2015.
Yeah.
So we're coming up on a decade.
Yeah. And I remember when I was in acting class, and it's funny how I just have some of these vivid memories. I remember I was like stuck at like, I was in the 400s for a long time.
Okay.
And I'm like, I just want to get to 500,000, you know? And it's like with any other business, I'm like, what makes them laugh? Like what, you know?
Yeah. Yeah.
And you just kind of like keep going, keep creating, keep going. And then, yeah.
Do you have a schedule you stick to?
No. I don't have a content schedule. I have like a content calendar that says like on this day I can post this. Don't always stick to it, but it's just nice to like see it and then move things around.
Yeah.
But don't necessarily have like a content day. I think I try to with my lovely sister and assistant who's here. I try to at the top of the week say, let's try to do it like this.
Sure.
It changes a lot.
Yeah. Yeah.
It changes a lot.
How many you think like on an average month, how many posts go out?
Ooh, average month. Well, there's definitely months that are busier than others.
Sure.
So the last month I've been doing a lot more stand-up. So I'd say I'd been doing like one or two posts a week.
Okay.
And then if I'm like really having more extra time to create content, like 3 posts a week.
Okay.
But
all do you have like
but you said a month, but I know what the difference between month and week is.
Dozens, though.
Yeah, you guys do the math, okay?
Yeah. So is there topics you try to stick to? Is there any
abortion.
Sort of structure?
Abortion.
Thank you.
Yeah.
That's what I wanted to hear.
That's the social media clip.
Yeah, that'll be the perfect teaser for this episode. Yeah. Or like, is there any structure around how you think about putting out that content? Or is it really just like, you know, I have this document that I just constantly throw jokes into.
Yeah, I have a document.
Sometimes it sparks something that makes me want to do a video and I go do that video.
Yeah. I'll give you guys a little sneak peek. Okay. I have a file on my computer. It is called Google Docs. And there's a chart that I have. And then it says, I would like to film this. I would like to write this. And I would like to post this. And then there's like a chart that I have with the calendar.
Nice.
And
that is helpful.
Even the on the post stuff, it's pictures that are already ready and content. And sometimes life gets so busy. I'm going to name drop. I have these pictures with Joe Coy from a show that I did with him. Mm-hmm. I did the show in July. I still want to post them. Things have been so crazy. So I'm just going to figure out a way out, you know.
Yeah.
It's like, it just sometimes shifts around.
Yeah.
So it's on my calendar and that was in July. Yeah. So, but it's all good thing, problems to have, right? When you just I just have a lot of content backed up and then you get inspired and you're like, I want to film something like that.
So the show is called Travis Makes Friends.
Yeah. Are we friends?
And, I mean, you tell me, Natalie. Are we
friends? I think so.
Yeah. I think officially.
Yeah. Right?
We've been like communicating.
But, yeah.
Yeah. This feels like more friendship.
And you said you're related to Dave Chappelle. So yeah, we're friends.
Yeah. No, yeah. We're actually related. No.
Yeah.
He has an extra E on his last name, but
yeah. You
know, whatever. Same thing. So I'm curious because I find that ironically in a time, like we are the most connected we've ever been technically from digital perspective, but we're also the most disconnected factually than we've ever been in terms of loneliness. Mm-hmm. Like more people report loneliness now than ever before.
That makes me sad. Yeah.
So that's why I'm a big believer in, hey, get out, go meet people, build friendships. First question along those lines,
I'm lonely. Sorry.
it's just been waiting there the whole time.
Yeah.
Yeah. How do you think about creating new friendships? Do you think about it? Is that something you proactively work on? And then if so, how?
Yeah. I try to always think about my life as a wheel. What's the term? Why am I blanking? It's just a wheel, right? Like a graph. With all the different pies. A pie chart.
Pie chart.
Pie chart.
There we go.
There we go.
Yeah.
We just tied with that. I try to always think like it's the health, it's the family, it's the friends, it's the spiritual, it's the work. Mm-hmm. And in some chapters of my life, like the beginning of this year, it was just so much work and like not hanging out with friends as much. Mm-hmm. Or like I'd see my friends with the work. And then there's
saying the friends that you work with. You'll see.
Yeah, yeah. So that kind of, you feel like you're hanging out with them because I work with a lot of my friends.
Sure.
And then there's a month where like I'm in Minnesota with my family. So to answer that question broadly, it's like it is a priority. And I want to make time for my friends and I try to and I do.
Yeah.
And I'm always open to meeting new friends. You know, there's friends that you know, quantity of years is great. But sometimes you could meet a friend tomorrow that, you know, ends up being your friend for life.
Just your people.
Yeah. So I'm always open to meeting new friends. I'm really thankful for my current friends. And, you know, I was talking to a friend about this the other day, like, and you hear it on podcasts too, like cutting off toxic people and friends and all that. And like friendship breakups are a real thing too. Like you can't really go through a life as an adult and say like, I stayed friends with everyone. And I want to be friends.
Probably a little bit of a problem.
Yeah. And it's like, I love making new friends and nourishing those relationships. And sometimes it's hard because of travel and busy schedules. And then I love those friends where if you don't see them for 9 months and you just pick up like you never left.
Totally.
And
those are the best.
I love those. So
that's what happens though when you go make friends based on commonalities or common interests or things that you know that or at least common values to a certain extent. Because a lot of my friends now is like I have friends all over the political spectrum, religious spectrum, like all these different people that are in my life now that maybe when I was a kid I would have been like, no way I'd ever be friends with somebody like that.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? But now they're better friends than the people that I knew back then.
Yeah.
You know, and I think that it's a testament to the fact that it's because when I decided that I wanted to pursue a certain path for my life, even though none of the people that I knew in my life were on that path, though everybody else that I met on that path also did that. You kind of like what you, like your story, right? Like the people that leave the Midwest to go to New York, go to LA because they feel this pull to entertainment or acting or comedy or something.
Yeah.
Like those are your people.
Yeah.
You know, because there's not a lot of people that leave that. Like if they have that strong family friendship unit in, you know, Minnesota or in Iowa or, you know, South Dakota or whatever, like they tend to just stay there
because that's what feels the safest and that's the path that they choose. And there's nothing wrong with that either. But then when you, when you're like, ah, that's not me though. I want to do something different.
Yeah.
And then you go do that, even though you're leaving all those people behind in a sense, you're meeting the people at those places that also did that is my point. Yep. So like you immediately have this like camaraderie, this, this like this commonality that draws you closer to those people. Like what I say, like they're your people.
Yeah.
So like, you don't have to work as hard at those relationships when it's just like, we share similar values, we share similar interests.
Yeah.
And like, you're somebody that like we can be genuine friends, you know, as long as we treat each other correctly. You know what I mean? So I just, I'm always telling them like, you don't have to go purposefully like cut off people unless it's extremely toxic, like
an
extreme situation. Right. But a lot of times it's just going to be that when you pursue your interests and they pursue their interests, if those interests don't align, you're just going to naturally grow away from those people.
And I think it's about desire. If you want to keep those relationships and, and to your point, you said you have friends that are all sorts of, you know, political preferences and religious religions and ethnicities. And I think that we've, as a society, become so judgy and labely and like, well, this person's blue and this person's red. And like, I don't know, maybe one of your best friends is out there who's the opposite, you know, political preference of you or you know, and I think that we're just labeling each other so much, especially on social media. And then with COVID, there were, you know, as you heard, all these family arguments about vaccines and everything. And just, we took the human out of it. And like you said, like you, if you want to have friends that are all the same things as you, that's okay too.
Yeah.
But I really try to keep an open mind.
Yeah.
And I think that we need to judge each other less. I think we need to get to know each other. And if you are lonely, which is a real thing, kind of like what we said about the social media strategy, like keep trying, go to events and like be your authentic self and like send it. You know, I met a friend that's a girl through a DM. Because like I messaged her something and like we became friends that way. So like there's so many, the blessing about the technology and the social media is that you could make friends. And I think there's even like, I think one of my friends said that there's like friendship apps to like meet friends. I've never tried that. But one of my friends said she's trying it because she just moved.
Yeah.
So I'd say the same thing applies.
Or even like meetup.com.
You know, you can go I told my grandma to get on that.
Group or, you know, chess club or
I think that's all amazing stuff. And if you take yoga classes, talk to that person. And if you're like, I don't want to talk to people when I go to the gym, that's okay too. But I think that I wish I could cure loneliness. I wish I could. Yeah. It makes me sad when, you know.
Especially when you realize how crucial it is.
Relationships are so important and
to everything.
And I know you're big on statistics and articles and that, you know, the research that's out there that like loneliness is the equivalent to smoking cigarettes.
Yeah.
Same with sitting all day. Like we know those things. And I've seen documentaries and read articles from Harvard and everywhere that relationships are so important.
Yeah.
And, you know, like I said, I have chapters in life where I'm like going really hard with work and I haven't really like had fun with my friends. And I at least try to like text or, you know, have those girlfriends that you send 7-minute audio texts to. Shout out to you guys for that. And then you're recording an audio message. The worst is
somebody calls
recording, somebody calls. Apple, iPhone, who's in charge of engineering?
Yeah.
We need to fix that. We need to, because, but, and then it doesn't, like, it should just save what you've done.
Right, right.
Just save what you've done. Let the call come in. Or, because I told you I put a lot of alarms in my phone.
Oh, yeah.
If that alarm comes off, that the whole 3 minutes, I needed to send that.
And
so
you can't
let's get
skip
on that.
Through. Like you can't increase the speed. That's you think that's such a simple thing.
Oh yeah,
because
you can on WhatsApp.
You can on WhatsApp. You can on Instagram
and you
now.
You can slow it down.
Instagram just came out with that themselves.
You love audio texts.
I do too. But
I love them.
I hate
you know those people that are like,
why'd you send me this? Yeah.
It's like, do you want me to call you?
Yeah, it's so exactly. It's so much easier. I'd love to do it, but Apple, like you're saying, is making it so damn difficult.
Yeah.
I don't understand it. Just like
so,
make it easier.
Yeah.
I don't understand. Make it more like a walkie-talkie. Like, you know, allow me to have a conversation with somebody through audio messages where it actually makes sense. Where like I don't get it. AI could easily search through and transcribe in real time to still let you search through. Cause that's like the worst part about audio for me is like, if I try to go back and find something in a conversation, it was like, oh shit, that was audio. No way I'm going to find that one message cause I can't search it, you know, but you should be able to search it. You know what I mean? Like you should be able just to search the transcript because
we'll get there.
AI can do that so quickly.
Yeah.
So Apple just hasn't put enough thought into the audio thing. But I think if more people just keep doing it, so audio people, stay strong.
Yeah.
You know, stay strong out there. Stuff.
Stay strong. All my girls that are sending 9-minute audios and you're repeating the same thing 7 times. It could have been 3 minutes.
You say, but yeah. Like
but yeah.
Four times.
So like, yeah. You know, like the girls anyway, in LA when they go, no, yeah.
No, yeah.
Yeah, no. Isn't the word for that like, just maybe? Yeah. Like which one is it? Yeah, no. Like
well, I think
no, yeah.
If it's no, yeah.
Then it's
yes.
Yeah. And if it's no, then it's no.
Right. But it could be the one word.
Or it could be maybe.
You could just say no.
Like, no, like, yeah. Like, no, yeah. Yeah, no. Like, I was, and then the, my friend group from Minnesota, I love them. We use the word actually so much that we made it almost an inside joke. Like we'll exaggerate it when we're talking. We'll be like, actually, literally,
literally,
so many adjectives and
literally is one for sure that is overused.
And then, yeah, sometimes I say honestly and my friend will be like, so are the other things you're saying not honest?
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
They're all fucking lies.
I love.
Oh, wow. We got ghosts in the building.
I know. It's coming down. Yeah, literally is one where it's funny how often it's used when it's literally not being used literally.
Yeah.
Like somebody will take, you'll take the time to say the word literally.
Yeah.
And then say something exaggerative or say something that's hyperbole. And it's like, that's literally not what literally means. Why did you even say a different word? Just put a different word in there. Why are you using the word that doesn't even make any sense for that, for what you're trying to say? LA verbiage though.
No cap.
LA vocabulary.
No cap.
No cap. Okay. On God.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, Natalie,
this has been mad fun.
It's been a blast.
Yeah.
I appreciate you coming on.
Yeah.
I gotta ask you one more question before we sign off.
Okay.
It's a question I've asked hundreds of people. Okay. So I try to ask it whenever I remember to. Sometimes I don't remember for some reason, but sometimes I do. Who you know or what you know? Which one of those is more important in life?
Dun 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 dun. Well, I think what you know first, because then you can go all meet, you can meet all the who's later.
Okay.
Because if you know all the who's and then there's nothing in your brain, what are the who's going to do for you?
That's true. Then what are you going to do for the who's?
Mic drop.
Yeah.
Is this a Dr. Seuss?
I literally was going to say, it sounds like Dr. Seuss wrote that. Yeah.
Yeah. I think that's my answer.
Okay. Great. Great. We'll wrap it right there.
Thanks. Thanks for having me. Thank you, everyone.
Yeah. And I was going to say, anything that you're working on right now that we can go check out?
Yeah. I'm always announcing new shows. I'm doing a fall and winter tour. So my Instagram is my name, Natalie Friedman. Friedman is spelled like fried man. Constantly posting all my shows on there. I perform in LA quite a bit. And so check out if I'm coming to your city.
Sweet.
And say that you saw me. Let's have a code for your people if they come to my shows.
Something about friendship.
Yeah.
Just we're friends.
Just be like, hi, we're friends.
Let's be friends.
Yeah,
we're
already
friends.
Yeah. Yep. So I do all the announcements usually on my Instagram and TikTok and things like that.
Natalie Friedman.
Yep.
FRIEDMAN.
Yep. Friedman is spelled like fried man.
Got it. At Natalie Friedman. Go check out
everything
Natalie's putting out there. Like some videos. Follow her if you're not already. Tell her you heard about her here on the show. Natalie, it's been a blast.
Thanks for having me.
Yes, ma'am.
I love the work you're doing. Keep going.
Yes, ma'am. We'll do it. That's it for today's episode. Thanks for spending some time with me and my friends. If you want to be better friends with me, then head over to travischappell.com/team to subscribe to my free newsletter, Your Friend Travis, where I share what's on my mind about life, building a business, raising kids, being married, and anything else I would normally share with my close circle of friends. That's travischappell.com/team. And my biggest ask of you, since I'm sharing my friends with you, is to share this episode with a friend of yours that hasn't listened to the show yet and leave us a quick 5-star rating in Apple Podcasts and in Spotify. It would mean the world to us as it helps us make sure that this show continues to be more valuable to you. Thanks in advance, and I'll catch you on the next episode.
Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you'll get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matters more than ever. Place your money line, prop, or parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park.
Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.